You're listening to Caring Connections with Nicole Bruno, supported by Homewatch Caregivers, whose mission is to preserve dignity, protect independence, and provide peace of mind for their clients and loved ones by providing exceptional home care.
97.9 FM WCHL is pleased to present Caring Connections with Nicole Bruno. Nicole has over 15 years of experience as a geriatric social worker and administrator, working in the long-term care industry to include skilled nursing care, Alzheimer's care, adult daycare, and home care. She also worked as a family caregiver. In addition, Nicole co-founded a nonprofit in the Triangle that specializes in support for caregivers. Now, Caring Connections with Nicole Bruno.
This is Nicole Bruno, your host of Caring Connections on WCHL. Today, I will be speaking with Dr. Dan Coffer, Director of the UNC Memory Disorders Program in the Department of Neurology. Today, we'll be discussing frontal temporal degeneration, also known as FTD. Welcome, Dr. Coffer.
Thank you, Nicole.
Thank you so much for joining us today. I think this is a very important topic to talk about. I think oftentimes people lump all the different various types of dementia together as one group, and I know that FTD has some very distinct differences from many of the other dementias, such as Alzheimer's. So, you brought with you some of the top 10 things that people don't know about FTD and probably should. And one of the things that I thought I would highlight is that typically FTD affects people in their 50s and 60s, different than Alzheimer's onset, which is in the 70s and 80s.
Yes, and I think just as a first point about the difference between FTD and Alzheimer's disease is there are many, our whole concept of dementia is colored primarily by Alzheimer's disease, that it affects people in their 70s and 80s, it's short-term memory that usually is the problem, and that's often lumped into senility or viewed as something that is a natural consequence of aging.
Mm-hmm.
And FTD is a really much different type of degenerative brain disorder. It tends to affect people in their 50s and 60s,
mm-hmm.
and it tends to affect things that aren't so easy to recognize or to measure in a clinic, things like personality or language function or how one responds to other people emotionally. And these are things that we don't usually think of as being signs of a brain disorder,
mm-hmm.
but are the very these are the cardinal signs of FTD, which are often mistaken for things that don't reflect a brain disorder.
More like a mental disorder.
Exactly.
Like a depression or a personality disorder.
A psychiatric problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so in many cases, this disorder doesn't get recognized until its middle or late stages. Whereas I think with greater knowledge of this disease and its many different types of presentations, I think that will help us get to people earlier in the course of the disease where interventions may ultimately be more helpful.
So what is exactly FTD?
So FTD is a brain disorder that was defined around the time of Alzheimer's disease over 100 years ago, and it affects different parts of the brain than Alzheimer's disease does. The main parts of the brain that are affected are the front part of the brain and the temporal lobe. These parts of the brain mediate functions such as memory, personality, judgment, decision-making, and really the core of our personality and what makes us unique individuals. With FTD, different parts of these frontal and temporal regions can be affected, giving rise to very unique clinical presentations, which are often very different from person to person.
Hmm.
And that contributes to the difficulty in pinning down FTD from a diagnostic point of view. By comparison, people with early stage Alzheimer's disease can often be detected by clinical suspicion of repeating themselves or having other memory problems, and then by doing simple pencil and paper tests that can document that they have a memory problem. With FTD, on the other hand, the tests that we use to help us identify Alzheimer's disease aren't usually very useful.
Mm-hmm.
People tend to do very well on those types of tests because the problems in patients with FTD are in more of the social or personal or language domain. So the FTD manifestations really are rooted in our social interactions and how we relate to other people. And that is something that clinically we just don't have good ways to measure.
So how do you make a diagnosis?
Well, making a diagnosis in a patient with FTD is very dependent on having someone accompany the patient to the clinic that's able to say, these are the changes that have occurred over time, and I'm not sure what is causing this. And many times people don't relate a personality change to being a brain disorder. We have questionnaires that we use that provide the information that's relevant to the types of behavior and personality changes seen in FTD. So I routinely screen for those in my practice, which makes it relatively easy for me to make the diagnosis. Whereas the forms I use are not part of routine clinical practice for other types of memory problems, so that patients with FTD are often missed in the general community, although I see patients literally from all corners of the state by referral from doctors who suspect there may be something going on, but they're not able to identify it themselves. And I think that brings up another point. Given the type of manifestations that people with FTD have, given the relatively early age of onset, and one striking feature of FTD is that brain changes that we can see on MRI imaging are often quite prominent, that if we don't actually look at the scan ourselves, oftentimes the radiologist who doesn't know the history as well may not pick that up.
Wow. So if I were caring for somebody at home, what are some of the symptoms that I might be looking out for if I suspect there might be something going on?
So the typical changes that occur can vary, and that's what makes FTD in some ways so difficult. When we think of Alzheimer's disease, we automatically think of memory problems, and that's to a large degree too. But people with FTD, the initial signs may be they have trouble expressing themselves, or they have difficulty understanding what people say to them, or difficulty understanding what they read, where they gradually lose the ability to understand single words, or they may just become very apathetic and lose interest in everything. I refer to that as the vanilla type of FTD, where another type that you can see are patients who become very disinhibited and very impulsive and who actually do the kinds of things that we all think of but that we all hold back on because we know in normal society there are certain things that we don't do.
Where we're going to need to take a short break. This is your host, Nicole Bruno of Caring Connections on WCHL, and today I'm talking with Dr. Dan Cawford, director of the UNC Memory Disorders Program in the Department of Neurology, about FTD, and we will be right back.
Caring Connections with Nicole Bruno on 97.9 FM WCHL, supported by Home Watch Caregivers. Now, more of Caring Connections.
Welcome back. This is Nicole Bruno, your host of Caring Connections on WCHL. Today I'm talking with Dr. Dan Cawford, the director of the UNC Memory Disorders Program in the Department of Neurology, and we are talking about frontotemporal degeneration, also known as FTD. Welcome back, Dr. Cawford.
Thank you, Nicole.
Okay, so we were just talking about some of the signs and symptoms of the disease and what you can expect and how it impacts a person and their ability to empathize with others. How does FTD or does it overlap with any other dementia such as Alzheimer's disease?
I think that question is fundamentally important because one of the things in our field that has changed dramatically, and this is just in the last few years, is that we're shifting our focus from looking at these disorders from clinical diseases where we pay attention only when we see the clinical manifestations. We're shifting away from that towards looking at changes that are going on in the brain years and even decades before we see clinical signs and symptoms. And I think that's a very important point that applies to Alzheimer's disease and FTD and Parkinson's disease and other degenerative brain disorders. We really need to focus on what's going on in the brain as opposed to just dealing with the symptoms that we see. By the time we actually see signs and symptoms, the disease process has been going on for years and years and years. And what we've learned is that if we wait for the full-blown signs to appear, it's going to be a lot harder to treat. So the earlier on in the course of the disease that we can intervene, the better the chances we will have of having effective treatments. Now, to do that really relies on not just paying attention to the different clinical manifestations, but also different proteins which accumulate and which help define different degenerative brain disorders. Right now, we have treatments for Alzheimer's disease and to some degree for FTD and Parkinson's disease. All the treatments we have now are really focused on treating symptoms, either cognitive symptoms or behavioral symptoms, mood, anxiety, things like that. What we ultimately want to have are treatments that are specific for that different protein abnormality. And in this case, with FTD, there are different types of abnormal proteins which can cause FTD. So it's not just one disease. Mm-hmm. There are several different proteins that can give rise to what we clinically call FTD. The implication of that is that one treatment isn't going to cure everybody. Mm-hmm. We're going to need to develop different treatments for each different type of FTD.
So I guess similarly to how you might look at a cancer where you have different types of chemo that you use for different types of cancers, you may have different types of treatments for.
That is a perfect analogy. And I think what's happening now in breast cancer and in other forms of cancer, once a cancer is diagnosed, then it is basically profiled on a molecular level, mm-hmm. and the treatment is geared to that specific profile. Ultimately, I think treatments for these degenerative brain disorders are going to follow the same line. The key for us now is to be able to, and what we're trying to do, is identify markers that we can measure either in blood or other parts of the body that will give us a marker or a way to identify the disease process before the symptoms actually occur. And this is where a very active area of research is going on. One thing we've learned about Alzheimer's disease is that if everybody works alone, we're not going to get anywhere. Mm-hmm. And with FTD, even though it's much less common than Alzheimer's disease, the community of researchers and support system in FTD in the country and around the world is a very tight-knit group. Mm-hmm. And we're very lucky here in the Triangle to have outstanding support services, including the Triangle Aphasia Project for patients who have primary progressive aphasia, which is one clinical type of FTD, and Alzheimer's North Carolina, which has done a fantastic job helping caregivers of various dementias cope with the diseases to better understand and to better manage the disease that they're facing. Mm-hmm. There's a national organization, the Association for Frontotemporal Degeneration, based in Philadelphia, which has great educational materials and also is very involved in helping to guide the research arm for this disease.
So are there any treatments for FTD currently or studies going on that folks can participate in?
At present, there aren't any proven therapies for FTD. Okay. And in fact, it's only been in the last year that the first multi-center clinical trial across 11 sites in the United States actually conducted the first experimental trial for FTD. Unfortunately, that treatment wasn't shown to be effective. But that trial was still a success in that it proved that we could actually do this kind of trial. Nobody had ever tried to do this before. And in particular, when you're looking at endpoints that include personality or emotion or language, how to measure a treatment effect isn't so straightforward. It's relatively easy to look at changes in memory or other cognitive mm-hmm. domains, but how do you measure a change in personality or a change mm-hmm. in behavior?
It seems very subjective, yeah.
It's a much harder thing to do, and I think even in the first study, we've learned a good deal about what it's going to take to do a reliable and valid study. And I think even though that treatment wasn't shown to be effective, it's really going to help move us forward very quickly to be able to evaluate other novel therapies which may actually treat the underlying disease. In fact, we're about to begin a trial very soon that looks at a treatment that does target the underlying protein for a very common form of FTD. We're very excited about this because this is the type of treatment that if it is proven to be effective and we're able to identify people very early on in the course, then we would have the potential to really alter the course of the disease in a very significant way.
It definitely sounds like an exciting time.
And another area where that plays into is inheritance. Mm-hmm. With Alzheimer's disease or any type of degenerative brain disorder, the family members always want to know, what's my risk of getting affected? Mm-hmm. In fact, with frontotemporal degeneration, there are familial forms of the various types of FTD. It does run a little bit more commonly in families, but even in a family where many, many people are affected, the most risk, the highest risk that any individual can have, even if your parent has a genetic mutation that causes the disease, the greatest risk is only 50-50. So it's, I know people who have strong family histories can be very concerned, but even the worst case is a 50-50. And in most cases, the risk from genetics is much less than that. I bring genetics in because I think that is really potentially going to be very helpful to identify the types of therapeutic targets that will be most effective. Because when we understand what the genetic problem is and what problems that leads to in the protein, that can help guide us in developing therapies that will actually do what we want them to do.
Well, we need to take a short break. I'm Nicole Bruno, your host of Care and Connections on WCHL, and we will be right back.
Caring Connections with Nicole Bruno on 97.9 FM WCHL, supported by Home Watch Caregivers. Now, more of Caring Connections.
Welcome back. This is Nicole Bruno, your host of Caring Connections on WCHL, and today we have been discussing FTD with Dr. Dan Coffer, the director of the UNC Memory Disorders Program in the Department of Neurology. So I think one of the things that I want to talk about, you know, this can be a very obviously devastating disease to folks that it affects in their families, and you know, how does a person cope with a disease that really doesn't have any treatments currently or cure?
Well, that's a really good question, Nicole, because coping with FTD and all its different manifestations can be very challenging. And not that to compare as a contest, but caregivers of patients with FTD, I think, deal with the most severe stressors of any degenerative dementia, just with the wide range of behavior and personality changes. It's one thing to be able to take over a function such as managing money or a calendar, but when someone's behaving differently, you have to put up with that, and that makes doing these normal everyday tasks even that much harder. I think the biggest help for managing FTD is contacting people at ELSNC and Triangle Aphasia Project, mm-hmm. who are very experienced and knowledgeable about how to manage behavioral symptoms. And we're at the stage with FTD where our pharmacological treatments aren't that advanced. They can help some, mm-hmm. but I think the most effective treatments are really how to manage and structure behaviors. And I think mm-hmm. having structured activities for individuals, we have some great daycare programs in the Triangle area mm-hmm. that have catered to individuals with FTD and have really done a great job handling them. We have very outstanding nurses and occupational therapists who can help coach caregivers how to handle problematic behaviors. We have a very strong network within the Triangle support network, which was really illustrated by our Triangle FTD Family Conference.
Now, tell us more about that.
So 2 years ago, we began seeing a lot of patients with FTD from around the state, and we thought, gee, there's not much going on about this. We should really have a conference to try and bring everybody together. And we expected about 50 people. Mm-hmm. Well, a couple months later, we had to limit the enrollment to 200.
Oh, wow.
And it was a transformative experience for me just to have everybody who's dealing with it at whatever level, whether a patient or a caregiver or a community health care provider or physician provider, it got everybody together under a common cause, and it was just so motivating and so inspiring.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so very much for joining us today. It was a true pleasure to have you, and I'm sure you've helped so many people listening to our show.
Thank you, Nicole. My pleasure.
This is Nicole Bruno, your host of Caring Connections on WCHL, and as always, you may email your caring questions to caring@1360wchl.com. Thanks so much, and have a wonderful day.
The purpose of Caring Connections is to educate listeners to help improve the quality of life for families, for professional caregivers, as well as those people affected with Alzheimer's disease.
Caring Connections with Nicole Bruno is supported by Home Watch Caregivers. You can hear this and any other program of Caring Connections on WCHL's website, chapelboro.com. Be sure to email questions to caring@1360wchl.com. Caring Connections is a presentation of 97.9 FM, WCHL, Chapel Hill Carborough's news, talk, and Tar Heel Station.